Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Corey Hangry Knockreiner. Where's my lunch, Mark?
We just had lunch.
I meant from before. I'm not hangry now, I was hangry then.
Yes, in today's episode, we've got our second and actual final recap, almost live from Las Vegas at the DEF CON Security Conference, where we'll go over some of our favorite talks, what we saw, what we learned. And with that, let's go ahead and jump on in.
The water's warm,
as
especially
Vegas.
Here in Vegas.
I'm sorry.
Beat me to it.
So we actually went to quite a few talks today, despite our CTF challenge still going on throughout the day. One of the ones that jumped out at me was actually put on by Joseph Cox from Motherboard.
Cool.
He's a journalist.
I've read him.
Yep, exactly. If you're in the tech space and you read a lot of news, you've probably read something by Joseph Cox. But he talked on the topic of how you can buy AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint real-time location data on the black market.
And even Verizon, apparently, through alternate means.
Even Verizon. So he basically walked through the layers of abstraction that these carriers used to have between the mobile data that they collected from users, whether it be tower location or GPS-assisted location.
Yeah, the two types of data. One is cell, and that's via tower triangulation.
Yeah.
And that seems like it's within blocks at best, but it could be even tens of blocks.
Yep.
But then the other one was A-GPS, which... it's down to meters, right?
Yeah,
they pointed out double digit.
You could find the location of someone within their house, basically, using this. But anyways, up until, I think, earlier this year, was it? These mobile carriers that he mentioned were selling this information to not just law enforcement, but private companies.
Yeah.
They did kind of try and restrict it to, like, people that might have a use for it, like bounty hunters or people that are repossessing cars. And
well, they also had like EULAs that the people that were buying it were supposed to honor. And they even had wording in their EULAs that you're supposed to contact the customer via a text to let them know when they're being located.
But it wasn't enforced.
It wasn't enforced in any way. It was just kind of, maybe it wasn't even a EULA. It was more like in best practices. And then some of the third parties kind of removed that limitation from their usage.
Yep, exactly. And so this whole thing started when he received a tip from someone, an unnamed source, saying, hey, I can buy location data for anyone. Give me a U.S. phone number and I'll prove it to you.
Yep.
And this kind of jumped him down the rabbit hole where he found these different layers of carriers selling this information to location aggregators who then sold it to data brokers, who then sold it to the end client, which are like these bounty hunters or whatever. But then a second layer where these private organizations were turning around and selling that data on these like super nondescript hidden websites.
Yeah.
Like he mentioned one website where if you go to it, it has a old like late 90s under construction, sorry, we'll be here eventually thing. But if you go to a specific page, there's a login form where you can log into this website.
Yeah.
And he showed screenshots of administrator access where there were like 200 something companies that had access to basically request and pay for location lookups through this service, then through up all those channels to the original data carrier.
And it's unclear. I mean, it didn't sound like these bounty hunters always using the best way, but it's unclear if this like one site was entirely bad or if it was insiders. Like there were some admins that seemed to be reusing their admin credentials and kind of selling it. So it's hard to say if all those 250 bounty hunters misused it or if some just bad actor inside was reselling to the underground.
Yep. And so they went through the whole journalistic process. This actually was a story from earlier this year, I think I mentioned.
Yeah.
They contacted them as of a few months ago. AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint said they're no longer selling people's data. Turns out Verizon had stricter rules on this.
Yeah, they always were a little better.
In fact, they enforced on their end notifying an individual when they were being tracked.
And that's a key
service.
Difference. I mean, some of the other carriers, they would say you need to inform the person before doing it, but they left it up to the third party
and
to do
not
it.
Not informing, they required active
text.
Consent from
them. Yeah,
too.
You'd have to send a text and they'd have to say, yes, you can track me. Who would do that?
Exactly.
But like you say, Verizon was actually doing that on their end. There was supposed to be no way around it.
Yep. So it was an interesting talk hearing about some of the shadier sides of the internet. I personally don't understand why they would ever think it's okay to sell this information to a private company in the first place, but whatever.
Well, Cox brought up all kinds of interesting things, like stalkers would be using this. You know, the bounty hunters, who knew what they sold it to, but it could be some stalker that could literally follow you. And how real time it was seemed to be have to do with how much you pay. You could ping all day long. They call these pings. You get a ping and it shows you a location. And if you did that, you know, continuously, you could follow a person all over the place.
Yep.
So
really
pretty
dang
dangerous
creepy
information.
And I'm glad they're changing their practices. Yeah. So how about you? What talks did you see?
So one of the interesting talks that I went to just for fun, I don't know how much practical stuff today you can really take away from it, but it was called Hacking Your Thoughts, Batman Forever Meets Black Mirror. And it was given by a PhD researcher, someone that went to UW, by the way, Catherine Pratt, who now works somewhere else, and she goes by the alias Gattacat. And it basically has to do with, you know, I think you and I have talked about Neuralink, Elon Musk's company, to get the brain-computer interface. And brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, are becoming more and more realistic. So she talked about some of the privacy implications of that data. Now, she started the talk by kind of defudding how good brain-computer interfaces are. We're not at the point, you know, the evasive ones that Musk recently had a talk showing some of the Neuralink research where they actually inserted things in rats' heads.
Yeah.
But she says some of the, you know, that is a little too dangerous. You shouldn't do that yet. She uses the caps. The amount of data you can really get, it's not like people can read your thoughts yet. But they have done studies where, you know, they can have you. One of the studies was they had five different pieces of jewelry. They would ask a subject to steal one and hide it. But then later on, they would show pictures of all those pieces of jewelry while you had this BCI cap plugged into your head. And they could predict which one you had taken based on that.
Interesting.
Or guessing numbers. She did an untrained test where there's no training. They'd just get you to pick a number 1 from 10, and then they'd see if the computer could guess which one you picked. And one of the interesting things for untrained tests like that, where you just have to pick something random, the computer only guessed right 3 out of 10 times, which actually is pretty good according to her, but isn't great as far as statistics yet. But it still was interesting. But was more interesting to that, they compared, so when they're doing these tests, when you're more attentive when you're taking the test, as they're testing subjects, people get bored and stop paying attention. So one of the things she does is make you press a space bar. If you're more attentive while you're taking the test, the computer's better at guessing your number, because apparently your brain is paying attention to your number more. But another interesting thing, about 6 out of 10 times, the next number, the number the computer guessed that was wrong was predictively guessing the next number that you were going to choose.
Oh, that's creepy.
And that's because she theorized maybe you were thinking that you're sick of being in this test, so you're thinking about the number to come next just to hurry it along. But anyways, first she showed how it is possible for this brain-computer interface to do stuff, including predictive information. It's still really early, so there's not much great there. But one day, this is going to be some serious information. Go ahead.
I'm not looking forward to the data breaches of Elon Musk's Neuralink or whatever that ends up with my thoughts on
the
dark
like
web.
She's like, maybe for video gaming, we hook this up to play video games, but then, of course, micropayment game companies are going to put in, like, little pictures of different coffee logos in their games, and then they'll see which one that we react to. Oh, Mark likes Starbucks coffee, and suddenly your game is going to get targeted advertising based on this subtle crap that's going on in your brain while you play a game. So she talked about that, and then she talked about some of the privacy laws and how nobody's covering BCI information and privacy yet. It's related to biometrics, and we really ought to think about that. So it's kind of interesting. I'm kind of interested in things like deep dive VR, so I'm interested in this Neuralink stuff.
Interesting.
But it does seem like we need to think about the privacy implication now, but I think this technology is at least a decade away.
Yep. Hopefully we figure out that privacy implication sooner rather than later, though.
Yep. Anything else cool?
Yeah. So another talk I went to was a totally just for fun talk put on by Bill Swearingen, who I guess has been a goon or like a party organizer for DEF CON for something like 15 years or so.
Wow.
He's been around for a long time, but this was his first talk, I believe. And his talk was titled Hack the Police. Hack with a K C instead of CK because he's from Kansas City.
Yeah.
But really, his talk was all about radar and speed gun and laser speed gun detections. And so he started out his talk going over his history in the area where I guess he, as part of his previous history, he had developed a tool to abuse the MIRT, so the mobile infrared transmitter devices that police cars and buses use to get green lights signs.
Yeah, so they can change the lights.
Turns out that's super illegal to mess with or even sell these days. So he kind of jumped off that bandwagon, and now he started looking at speed guns. And so he started out talking about radar speed guns and how they use the Doppler effect to predict how fast you are going.
Yeah.
And you can jam that by sending out a signal at the exact right frequency for, like, saying I'm going at 65 miles an hour, if you know the original frequency.
But that's kind of dangerous too, right?
He pointed out that is federally illegal, regulated by the FCC. And on a federal level, it's a $50,000 fine and 5 years in prison.
Oh, damn.
If you're caught radar jamming. But then he jumped into the new laser speed trap detection systems, where because people have radar detectors, a radar detector is actually good these days. You can pick it up like 2 miles away. So cops are moving towards laser based detectors, where you cannot detect them until you are being hit and being marked.
Yeah.
But turns out that the light spectrum is not regulated by the FCC. It's regulated by the FDA. And it is not currently...
So wait a second. You just said FDA, the Federal Drug Administration?
The Food and Drug Administration regulates the light spectrum.
Huh. I guess I eat lasers for breakfast.
Don't we all? Yes. But it's not federally illegal to mess with this stuff. Also, because it is actually heavily regulated, because if you get a laser wrong, you blind someone.
Yeah.
They all have to use a specific spectrum, a specific color, like a non-visible infrared light. It was like 904 nanometers.
Huh.
And because of this, it's really easy to build something to, say, jam them.
Yeah, you know exactly what to look for.
So his whole talk was actually building up to releasing this open source tool that's built off a ESP8266, which is the predecessor for our ESP32 chips that we have in our badges. Some LEDs, some 904 nanometer LEDs, and then a hook into an app, basically. And long story short, he built a tool where it will, within one pulse from these laser detectors, figure out what the model is of the laser detector and then send back a pulse that basically makes it so it looks like you're going 0 miles an hour.
Oh, perfect.
And it works for a whole bunch of them.
Those helicopters that are shooting lasers at me from the sky.
Exactly. There's a few where it doesn't quite work for it. He called out to the audience to use their hacker skills to try and reverse engineer those and add them to the open source tool as well.
Cool.
But it was a fascinating and a really interesting talk. His tool is called Nachacacha. So his original tool is Kacha. This is Nachacacha. It also has an MIRT mode, which you mentioned is highly illegal to use, so don't use it, but it's there. But long story, it was a hilarious talk. The guy was a great speaker, and it was a fun
topic.
I'm
sure if it's a goon, he does the classic DEF CON fun talk.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
So how about you? Anything else?
So I think we both went to, the last one was, it was kind of cool. It wasn't super groundbreaking, but we both went to one called Unpackaging PKGs, which of course is a Mac OS package. When you're installing a new program, that tends to be the format you get. The subtitle was A Look Inside Mac OS Packages and Common Security Flaws. And essentially, I thought it was interesting just in him enumerating how PKGSs work. He talked about the utility all Macs have to unpackage them is called PackUtils, I think. And if you run that, it will unpack something into a folder. But he really wanted to know what happened there. So he talked about tricks like how you could use ZarXF to manually open a package because it was essentially just
an archive.
An archive, yes. And it would de-archive it into separate scripts you could look at. Then there were also scripts and packages, which you'd also have to unpack. And he really laid out how it goes about installing a package on a Mac OS computer, including some of the scripts used to kind of install things. And then he went through, he didn't really share what vendors had vulnerable package installers, but he went through a number of vulnerabilities he found in some of the scripts of installer packages that could do everything from elevate you to root to delete random delete arbitrary directories on your computer using root privileges and stuff like that, just because it was bad scripting. Things like sudoing certain tasks, and he could take advantage of that, or maybe sudoing a folder so he could just put some of his shell code into some other folder first.
Man.
It's a kind of interesting talk if you wanted to know how packages uninstalled or and what they contained. And there are ways to exploit them for privilege escalation. Now, you obviously have to already be on a system to do a lot of what he said. So this is more about privilege escalation. If you have some administrator controlling your Mac and you want root, hey, maybe get him to install a package for you this way.
Yeah, still an interesting talk, though.
Yeah, it was like, very it was interesting talk. By the way, if I didn't mention...
With. Oh, sorry. I said something I wasn't familiar
yeah,
with.
Yeah, for me, it was just a nice little education about PKGS files. The guy's name was, Andy Grant is the guy that did it. And he's from, I think, NCC Group,
yep.
Who we've dealt with before.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you had any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept. And the both of us are at #the443podcast as Corey mouths along as I say my lines. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you on our regularly scheduled podcast next week.
And remember, always on black.
Always on black.